The Rabbi's Podcast is brought to you by My Guys Marketing. Go to www.myguysmarketing.com for all your digital marketing needs.
This is the Rabbi's Podcast.
It's geschmack to be a hit.
Hello to everybody out there. I am Rabbi Pinchas Landis of Partners in Torah of Cleveland, Jewcast.com, and I am here with Rabbi Gamliel Nussan, Spiro of Yeshivas Avos HaTorah and Jewcast.com. How are you, Rabbi Spiro?
Good, Baruch Shem, how are you?
That was not very enthusiastic. Let's try that again, Rabbi Spiro. Rabbi Spiro, how are you?
The same.
Rabbi Spiro, we're going to do this till you get it right. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So what's new in the wacky wild world of Jewcast? I don't remember if we addressed it last time on the show, but you have finished on the Navi podcast, the Navim Rishonim, correct?
I did not finish. I finished myself. It is not, I finished recording them. It's, it should be, I think, Monday or Tuesday.
Beautiful.
Will be the day when they're going to be Rishonim. I started Yeshaya already, which Yeshaya is going to be a different Mahalach. I'm already four podcasts in the Yeshaya. I've just finished the first parak. That was a skipping last week. Sukkim, so it's going to be different, but we're going to figure it out. We're going to fight through it.
figure it out as you go, right? Yeah, I think I texted you a question yesterday because for the you might be a heretic if class, we got last night to the second section of the Yogim Ikrim. We got to the section of basically Nevius and Torah, and then we know the Torah is Min HaShemayim. And the first two principles, or principles 6 and 7, the first two in the section. Number one is that all the Nevius in general is MS, and then Moshe Rabbeinu is the Av and Nevim Shkodim Lefanav by Machrav, that he's the father of all prophets came before him and come after him. And I was, as quite often is the case, I'm sure it happens to you when I'm preparing a class, I'm left with many questions. Sometimes I bring them up and say, I don't have an answer to this. Sometimes I wait to see if the audience brings it up and I pray that they don't. And one question I've always had, and we've probably addressed on the podcast, probably, or maybe we haven't, but it's definitely a fascinating question, is the question of the canon in general. And by the canon, I'm not referring to statues that are being taken down all over the country. I'm referring to Tanakh, the whole canonization of Tanakh. And it actually prompted me to order, Schneer Lyman has a book on his approach to the canonization and how it happened.
Oh, really?
And background and
didn't know that.
Like many of Rabbi Lyman's stuff, I would, if I'm looking for another job at any point, I'm going to see if I can become his PR agent or his publisher, because he has so much great stuff that is just not very accessible. It's just not put out in an accessible way. So he wrote this book in the 70s and he republished it in 91, I believe. Later on, I get it, but it's But as it may, the whole canonization to begin with, the whole, but the question that I didn't ask I did mention the class last night is, what is really the difference between between Nevim and Ksuvim? That there's a couple different answers given, and really none of them are satisfactory. There's holes that can be punched into all of them. And I just wanted to see if you have an approach to that that you like more than others.
I thought about that question, and I've also seen answers, and I also don't have a great satisfactory answer. The simple pashut pshat answer is, as we know, is that both of them are considered to be words of Hashem and authoritative, and are used in drushas in the Gemara. Meaning, Eov is used in drushas, and Megillas Esther. All over the and many of the Ksuvah and Daniel are used for drushas and Tehillim, but they're not written al pi nevuah. Is the pshat I have heard?
Right.
They're not written al pi nevuah. Not that the people were neviim, and the Gemara Megillah does say explicitly that Megillah ruach hakodesh nam. Right. Remember, the Gemara brings different rayas. How we know the Dalar Tesvav, but the Gemara brings proofs. How we know Megillah is written with Ruach HaKadosh, but nonetheless, they're not prophecies for the future. They're not that they're not limudim for the future. They're learning for the future, but they're not prophecies for the future. That's the only difference that I am aware of. Are you aware
of any you're kind of quoting the Radak. The Radak says that that Navi is Nevius. It's the status of Nevius, whereas Ksuvim is Ruach HaKodesh, is Alpi Ruach HaKodesh, which is a less level. I mean, that's one of the things we went into in the class about how, you know, we have this concept, the Gemara talks about it in Yuma and Sanhedrin, about how there's no more Nevius now, that we're now a nonprofit organization. And but Rav Moshe Shapiro and the wonderful Sefer that he recommended to me actually delves into that a little bit. He deals with that point, but he really explains it as it's not necessarily that there's no prophecy anymore. It's that the whole concept of prophecy has gotten kind of slimmed down, if you will.
Right.
You went from what we call Nevius or prophecy to Ruach HaKodesh, divine spirit, for lack of a better translation. And then you go to Divrei Chazal, to learning, essentially. And he puts hand in hand with that the concept of the Baskol, right? Baskol is like, where does Baskol fit in? Like, in general, the Gemara, different Baskol situations sound like prophecy, right? Sound like some kind of voice from heaven. So he explains it really on a very, almost a practical level. He says, no. He says, what's the kol? The kol, the voice, if you will, that's the kol misinai. That's the voice from Mount Sinai that rings out throughout history.
Kol gadol v'yosef, right? The voice that's continually speaking to Klal Yisrael.
Right. And at different points in history, we've been closer to the voice, and that's prophecy, and then Ruach HaKodesh. Now we have Baskol. It's the daughter of the voice, right? It's the echo of the voice, if you will, meaning that when we see different miracles happen, when we see God's fingerprints on nature, when we see, different things happen, that's when, and because we learn and because we have an astute understanding of the Almighty, therefore we see the fingerprints of Hashem, and that's where it plays out today. So anyways,
The Gemara Bracha says that every day Baskol goes out from Har Sinai, and it says Eilam Lebrias LaAlbino Shal Torah, right? That Klal Yisrael left inside the Torah. So the Sifte Chaim actually writes, I don't remember where he says it, but the Sifte Chaim explains it that really, where's the Baskol heard? It's heard inside every single person, and I think that's the voice of Har Sinai that's still speaking to us. I don't know if I mentioned here, but I definitely didn't mention. I ran it by Reb Shalom, an idea by Reb Shalom Kamenetsky. The idea of the disagreement of the Gemara in Masechet Shabbos was the Torah given on Vav Sinai, Zion Sinai, on the Vav Sivan or Zion Sivan, on our Sinai, is not really a machlokes. Right?
Right.
The giving of the Torah, everyone agrees, including Rabbi Yossi, was on Vav Sivan, and the receiving of the Torah, everyone agrees, was on Zion Sivan. And I said I wanted to amplify that idea and say that not only is Zion Sivan, but the Zion Sivan is saying forever and ever. It's not saying exclusively stopped on Zion Sivan. It's saying the receiving of the Torah is continually amplified till today, and we're still receiving it. Kol Gadol LaYosef, what it says in Megillah, says LaYosef Mizarim. I told it to Reb Shalom, and he was masking to that point. And what the Maharal is saying to Pharisee Yisrael. So yeah, I think there could be a truth to that. So
you can say. And by the way, according to Rashi's Pshat in the Mishkan, that was also the point of the Mishkan. That the Mishkan was the Mishkan of our Sinai. Right. And basically, when we'll have it again,
right? So therefore, you could say that Ksuvim is just a lower level. And there's an interesting machlokes. If David HaMelech was a navi, if Shlomo was a navi, if Daniel was a navi, those are three people who wrote.
And Mordechai, say, Ezra, they're all.
Mordechai, I think is Muslim. Machlokes is a navi.
Yeah, Mordechai is one of the 48. Yeah,
right. David and Shlomo and Daniel, it's a machlokes about.
Got it. Meaning the whole four, the list of the four, meaning that's one of those, like one of these funny things we do as Jews, or really Chazal did for us, is they put certain numbers on things without defining them, right? And one of them was the Gemara says that there were 40 Nevi'im and 7 Nevi'os, but doesn't tell us.
47, right.
Right.
Four Nisnaba Ledairis for the generation, meaning much, much more than that, but there were.
Right. Which again, that I explain, I think I'm right on this, that they are the 48 Nevi'im mentioned in Tanakh. That all of them are mentioned in Tanakh, and that's what gives them the eternal status. Right. Now, what I'm not sure about is out of the Gemara says there are twice as many as left Mitzrayim that were Nevi'im. Right. So I'm wondering if there's others mentioned Tanakh that aren't on that list. I don't know.
I'm not sure, because it implies very clearly in the Gemara. And I'm sorry, in Navi, in Enem Malachim Malach, Malachim Beis, that there was a yeshiva for Nevi'im, that Eliyahu And then subsequently, Elisha had a yeshiva for Nevi'im.
Right.
So there were many, 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 many Nevi'im.
Right. I always say that this was one of those great lessons that we got from the one of the amazing theologians of our generation, George Lucas, and the Star Wars, not the original trilogy, but the prequels, where they went into how he became a Jedi. And it was yes, to start off, you had to have a high level of mitochlorians in your system, but that wasn't enough. You had to work on it. And really, again, it's a lahavdil. It's very much how I understand the views, because what are they saying? They're people who went and refined themselves and worked on themselves and tried to connect to what the force. If you learn the Rambam, if you learn, go to the Pirush Mishnayos or Chassidei Torah, Marim Nevuchim, or any, you know, and you learn up those first five principles, and George Lucas wasn't so far off. That's why we had our machlokas. I don't know, however many.
I don't know. I'm just gonna be chaylik on one thing. George Lucas was very far off. I don't know if you can say that.
Again, it was right. It was his siyata d'shmaya that he
had a general. He's, George Lucas is not a yid.
Right. Right.
Even Spielberg is a yid, but George Lucas is not a yid.
Right. I'm not, okay.
But just happens to be he's not Jewish. They made Indiana Jones together.
Yeah. Right. Right. And by the way, you know who was the other famous company that was started by George Lucas besides the Star Wars franchise? Pixar.
Oh, really?
Pixar was started by George Lucas, and he was going through a messy divorce with his wife, as many of these famous Hollywood people do. And he was short on cash, so he sold it off. It was a software company. It was just a animation software company at the time. And he sold it off to a friend of his for $5 million. That friend's name was Steve Jobs. And Steve Jobs, they had this like small chelik of the business that did the did little short movies. And Steve loved that part of it. And he always was pumping up that part of the business until the point where that became the business. And but that's, we had the debate earlier about when people use the term the universe, right? The universe gave, the universe said, how if that is an anti God statement or a pro God statement. And I said, and I agreed with you that it's etzem an anti God statement, that when people say the universe, they think they're saying something La'afuke the Rabbona Sha'olam. But really, if you learn up the Hashkafas of how the Rabbona Sha'olam is described to us, it's very much in line with the definition of the Rabbona Sha'olam.
But it is, but they don't mean it like that.
Yeah, of course, they don't mean it like that. But George Lucas didn't mean the Jedi's were Naveen.
Mother Nature, right? When people say Mother Nature, I think it's just a stupid comment. I don't know why, it drives me crazy, the idea of Mother Nature. As if it's some independent being. There's something called in English, it's called the pathetic fallacy. When people describe emotions to inanimate things, like they'll say, "Oh, the sky was moody today," right?
It's anthropomorphic. What'd you call that? It's anthropomorphism. Right, anthropomorphism. That's what it's called.
No, but right. Well,
which is the biggest word that any of us know, by the way.
Anthropomorphism is when we ascribe human qualities to Hashem.
It's really to any non. Human really? Object, yeah. It's just we think about it in terms of midrashim and even mikra, not even midrashim, but it really means anything. But be it as it may, I'm just saying that it's a funny socio-political thought process that when people sometimes think they're arguing against something and they're really arguing for it, and that's a funny thing that we see in the world all the time. So anyhow, but the other question that I sent to you, and I subsequently asked it to a few people, I don't have a good answer for it. In fact, one of the things I'm doing to prepare for this series is I'm listening to Shirim that I have from the Weinbergs at Saul on the Yogim Ikrim. And he mentions it, but then doesn't explain it. But the idea that, again, if you take the list of the 48 Nevi'im that is colloquially used, which I'm not sure what it's based on, I'm not sure who organized that list per se. But the first three are
Avram. Just know, I've had this question before. Whenever we have a number, and sometimes the Gemara will give a number, and there's not a universal agreement. The Gemara says,
right. That's what we were saying before. It's like not only is it sometimes like almost all the like Taryag Mitzvos, right?
Right. But so that's for example, where the Gemara says Arba Avos Nezikin, beginning of Bava Kamma. Mm-hmm. If you look as you go through the first parak, that's not Muskel Makol. Not Rabbi Shia says it's more. The different machlokes about that. However, Taryag Mitzvos, which is said at the end of Masechta Makos, that is Muskel Makol.
The number is
not what they are, but the number is.
So right. The listen to the VM is the same thing.
48 in a VM is not. There's no Chazal that argues a different number of the 48 in a VM and the Shiva Neviyas. But there is the question is who were the 48 and 7? Rashi holds has a list, but not everyone agrees on the list of who they were.
So it's not a Chazal. Interesting. I thought it was a Chazal in nature source. Anyways, but be it as it may,
48 and 7 is the source of Chazal.
Oh, right. Oh, so you're okay, fine. Right. And as Chazal say it was 55. Who those 55 were, similar to the Taryag, is
argues. Right. But no one argues on the number of 55.
Right, right. So we're saying the same thing. So the question I asked you yesterday was the seventh ikar of the Rambam is Moshe Rabbeinu was he's Anavim the Kumil Fanam of Bamachrab. He was the father of the prophets, those came before him, those come after him. The question is, what does that mean for the first three, according to I think all the first three Ravam, Yitzchak and Yaakov, and then Moshe. Right? Moshe was number four.
I'll tell you how the Ran learns it. In Drash Saran, the Ran says, I've been learning Drash Saran now. I learn it. We do first Seder. I do it before we start the regular Shir. I do Ashkof every day. I've been learning Drash Saran, which is an unbelievable Sefer. Mm-hmm. So Drash Saran, the Ran says that Moshe, how could it be that there would never be another Navi like Moshe Rabbeinu? How could such a statement like that have ever been made when who knew who would come after Moshe or who will come after Moshe even today? So he says, obviously, that there's a certain Hashem made it that way. As great as Moshe was, and Moshe earned who he was, but Hashem gave him also something extra that no other Navi could ever compare to him. Right? Therefore, I think the implication of what the Rambam means is that all Nevuah, that Moshe is there's no one, no one like him, is that no one can ever change. It's like Moshe never changed anything.
Well, yeah, so that's essentially... I mean, that's not quite how Moshe Shapiro explains it. Moshe Shapiro, working the words of the Rambam, says that basically Moshe Rabbeinu is the source of Nevius, because he's the one who brings the Torah from Hashem. And every, you know, we have the, he goes in detail with the different criteria for other Nevi'im, that they couldn't be Mechadesh anything. They could do an Osun and Moifis just to back up that they're Nevi'im, but if they said to change anything, then they're Navi Sheker. So he says that's what it means, the Av and Navim, that a Navi, like Yirmiyahu doesn't get started without a Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Yirmiyahu is only, or you're doing Yeshaya right now. So Yeshaya only is a Navi because there's a Moshe Rabbeinu who gave the Torah, who Hashem used as his conduit to give the Torah. So that's what it means. So that's what Moshe Shapiro says. It means the Av Navim, that began.
That's true, even for Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, though.
So that's what I was trying to wrap my head around. So go ahead. See what you're going to say.
I think you could say that even for Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, number one, according to the Rambam himself, he says even the Avos themselves were never in his nab upon him. Right? Not always showing him agree with that. But I think he's saying...
But not talking about the quality, the four distinctions the Rambam gives. Not going there. Right.
I understand that it's sourced from Moshe. I'm just saying the idea that it's sourced from, all Nevuah is sourced from Moshe, is the idea that only Moshe spoke Panim upon him. So even the...
I don't agree with that. Well, I don't agree with that.
Rambam says that, Mordevuchim.
Well, say it again.
According to the Rambam, only Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to Hashem Panim upon him. The others did not speak to Hashem Panim upon him, according to the Rambam.
Right, right.
But according to the Rambam. So therefore, when it says
that... But you made a jump there to say that therefore, because Moshe Rabbeinu spoke put him upon him to Hashem, that's why he's the source of Torah.
Yes, that's exactly what I think the Rambam is saying. I mean, because he spoke put him upon him Hashem, and the Avos themselves, even though the Avos obviously had a high level of Nevuah, but they did not have the put him upon him level of Nevuah. So therefore, they are not the source of Nevuah. They might have preceded Moshe Rabbeinu. There might have been some Kain Nevuah before Moshe Rabbeinu. There obviously was. There were many Nevi'im before Moshe.
Right. Shane, Aver, Chanoch, I mean, they're, you know.
Right.
Neach, Adam, you know.
Right, but at the same time, the qualitative level of their Nevuah never reached Moshe's. So therefore, all Nevuah that happens, even that those that preceded Moshe Rabbeinu only existed in the world because of the future abilities of Moshe, he would speak face to face. I know it's a chiddush I'm saying, but I'm not sure.
But I think, at least as I'm understanding this, again, built on the Rambam, I have not learned Mor Nevuchim, so I can't comment on Mor Nevuchim, and I'm just going on the Rambam, vis-a-vis Moshe Shapiro and Weinberg Zatzal, both of Zatzal, it's the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was a unique Navi in his quality of Navias, having that he was upon him Dabrabo, that he was awake, that he didn't tremble, that he didn't get it through an emissary. I think I'm missing one. I think that's the same as being awake. That he could do it on, so to speak, on demand, right? He had on demand where other Navim did not have on demand. So at least the way Moshe explains it, that's two separate points. In other words, that yes, Moshe Rabbeinu was on this level and no other Navi was on that level. But also, the Ribbono Shel Olam gave the Torah through Moshe Rabbeinu. The Moshe Rabbeinu was he's Moshe Rabbeinu, right? He's the one who was tasked with the job of giving over Torah to Klal Yisrael. Now, you can say, I think it could follow that that's why he had the extra qualities. That's why, you know, but that's fine. But what Moshe Shapiro is explaining is that a Navi only has a job because Moshe gives the Torah, right? In other words, the whole job of a Navi is to be Mechazek Torah's Moshe. Right, so therefore Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, who we count as Nevi'im, right? That would have to follow that their job as a Navi was to be Mechazek Torah Moshe for Klal Yisrael.
Right.
Okay. I wanted to say that it has to be that their Nevi'us is also exceptional, not level-wise exceptional, but just different. Whereas I think Moshe said it applies to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, so I can't argue on his words, but you know, as we'll see when we get the podcast dropped of Yeshaya, Yeshaya's job was to give Musar to Klal Yisrael, not to stray from Divrei Hashem, but which is Devar Moshe, you know, which is the Torah's Moshe, not Devar Moshe, it's Torah's Moshe.
But I think even the Avosah, you see, the Torah existed Kaidin Bri Asylum, right? We know that, right? The Gemara and Hadarim,
whatever that means, right?
Right. The Stack of Bar Alma, many, many different sources for the idea that the Torah existed before the world. So within this existence of the Torah, I'm not saying Moshe Rabbeinu specifically, but the conceptual idea of a person who would have this exceptional level of Nevuah, I think, it does all come from him to be Mechazik, his words. Even those who preceded him, chronologically.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I hear what you're saying. It's bothering me. You know, one of those questions that keeps me up at night. Well, not really, because I don't have any, Baruch Hashem, any problem sleeping. But so the other thing that I was thinking about, I'm hogging with the questions. I'm sure you have some deep thoughts you've had this week. What's been on your mind? I'll give you another one. All right.
I'm a very not profound person. I don't have any deep thoughts.
There you go. Okay, beautiful. So along those lines, I connected to our discussion last week that we had about the Meraglim, and we shtold to a little Kairach, and in general, the whole concept, if you will, of this very dark time for Klal Yisrael, really from the Nunei Afuchim and Ba'al Loisecha on through this week's Parsha. It's just a dark time for Klal Yisrael. That's the whole shot over there. You can see my talk on TorahAnytime.com, whereas my commencement address I gave to the Yeshiva High School of Cleveland, which I hear one of the commencers is coming to your yeshiva next year. That's what I heard. Right? One of the graduates of YHI.
Right, I think so.
Rabbi Kutov told me one almost got. Anyhow, so I spoke at the graduations past week, and I spoke out this idea about how the Torah separates from Tinoch Berech and Mesa Sefer. How when they left Har Sinai, they ran away from the other ones. Okay, don't go. You can check it on Torah anytime. But be it as it may, very dark time. And you raised an interesting question last week. You said you always had a hard time wrapping your head around the Meraglim. Because okay, Kairach, it was one charismatic guy who was able to influence many, and so you want to say Cheta Egel, is the Erev Rav, whatever. But you were more bothered by
the Meraglim,
seemingly by the Meraglim than the other ones. And it got me thinking. I was, you mentioned Sifsei Chaim before. You know, I'm a big, big chassid of the Sifsei Chaim. And one of my, one of the things I put into my Seder Yom is I actually go through the Sifsei Chaim and the Parshios. Again, not all of them because there's a lot more long essays, but I try and pick one per week that I work on and think about. So one of the essays I just started this morning for Kairach really asked this question, and it got me thinking in terms of, again, Rambam and Yigam Ikrim and some of the things we always say in Shavuos, just a lot of the things we're tying together these days, is that we talk about how we know that, we know that, I'm just going to say it like I said it kind of last night, we know that we're the right religion, so to speak, because we're the only one who had mass revelation. We're the only ones who had Har Sinai. We're the only ones where all the nation stood and heard God speak. We're the only, and not only that, but other major world religions agreed to it. They just say it was changed later. Right, the whole Kuzari argument. So Sifsei Chaim really kind of spins it all in his head in the beginning of his discussion on Kairach. He says, he's just pointing out how crazy the whole concept of Kairach is. And I think you can apply the same thing to the Meraglim. You can apply the same thing to Cheta Egel and the Mizonanim and any of the Dordea that did terrible atrocities after the Dea, after they received the knowledge. So he says, like, The example he gives is there is no way that I could convince you that it's night right now. And when it's night, there's no way I could convince you that it's day, right? Because through your senses, you know, Baruch Hashem, you have sight and everything. You know it's night. You know it's day. There's no way I can convince you night is day and day is night. There's no physical way. So he said it would seem that for Kairach to be able to convince a lot of people, I mean, how many people in the end die? 3,000, 4,000? I forget the number, but it's, you had the Kairach of Adal, so it was 250. And then you had the other several thousand people who complain afterwards, like, why'd you kill them? Right, who died and then I gave afterwards, I think like 2,000 or 3,000, I forget the number, I don't have a chumash open in front of me. But be as it may, like, how is it that Kairach could convince anybody that the whole kayach of Har Sinai was wrong? I mean, think about it. What do we say was the big Kuzari argument? The kayach of Har Sinai was that all of Klal Yisrael heard what? Not the Seres Hadibros. I mean, again, the Seres Hadibros, I don't want to minimize that, but it was not only that. It's what was the other part that the Ribbono Shel Olam said, Moshe Rabbeinu, go tell them, go tell them such and such, right? That's what the Medrash says. That Klal Yisrael heard the Almighty say that Moshe is my main prophet and he's going to give you all the details. That is what we always say was like the main kihem chayenu of Har Sinai. And that's what Kairach came to schlug up. That's exactly what Kairach came
I don't hear the question so stark because, I mean, how does he answer first? And I'll tell you why I don't hear.
No, I've only, gotten about two or three pages into the essay. why it bothers me is, again, with the clientele that I work with, we always say this is like, as I'll have us here to say hello, we always say this is like a, one of the biggest proofs of the, of our Mesorah and Mitzvah Shel Torah, and that you can't fake it, that this is what we heard, and this is what we know, and Mesorah, and here you see the door day alone, Kairach Vedaso, Kairach was able to convince people otherwise.
I think the limud is obvious. The limud is obvious. I think the limud is, you look at the Maharal speaks about the idea, this is my thought of the week. Of the Maharal talks about the evils of Machlokes, and it's very hard for every Jew, I'm talking about every thinking Jew, every Jew who is faithful to the mission of Judaism, which we know from, or say from Rav Sadia Gaon, right? Ain umasein uma aidei Torah, only a nation because of the Torah. Any Jew faithful, who's truly faithful to that, and Baruch Hashem, many, many Jews throughout the years, but there's also within each, there's different arguments, which is a healthy thing. Not everyone should agree, everyone should be different. And I'm a big believer in that, but at the same time, along with being different, it leads to the idea of machlokes. So you look at the Lashon of the Maharal and Derech Chaim, where it mentions Kairach, where it talks about machlokes Hashem Shemayim, the Maharal says very harsh words, that machlokes is the worst thing. Right? And if you look throughout Tanakh, you'll see the people who made massive, massive errors. Let's throw out one right now. Shimi ben Gera. Shimi ben Gera, Rashi writes, was the head of the Sanhedrin in that generation. He was the Rebbe of Shlomo HaMelech, right? He wasn't a great person. That, I think that's too trite to say about him. He was one of the greatest people of that generation. And being the head of the Sanhedrin in a dar like that, in a dar of Nevuah, he was an extraordinary person. But at the same time, he could not get over her shame of Moshe. But I think it's really obvious throughout the Pesukim. He was a cousin to Shaul HaMelech. He could not get over the idea of the Melucha being moved away from Shaul to David. He could not get, he could never reconcile himself to this. Mm-hmm. Again, it's funny, he's the Rebbe of David's son. He was Shlomo's Rebbe.
And, right? And again, another person from the same time period, Yeravam ben Nevat.
Right, but Shimon Gera could never reconcile himself to this idea. So what do we learn? It's the idea of human emotions that are so powerful. And amongst them, Machlaikis is the Maral is a Lushan, and that Derech Chaim, a scary Lushan, that everyone's Meishach towards Machlaikis. And Machlaikis is so seductive, it's so attractive. And you look how many yeshivas and Jewish institutions have been destroyed because of Machlaikis, Vamei and Yavin. And it's so obvious. So, Kairach, I don't find that story so schwer. I'll tell you why. I don't find the story so complicated. Because obviously, you look at the Unkelus in the beginning of the parish. What does Unkelus say, the first two words? Vizpolad Kairach. The pasuk is Vayikach Kairach. But Unkelus doesn't say it's Vizpolad. He divided. Kairach was divisive. Mm-hmm. He just wanted to take for himself, even though he was a great person. And if you look at the Svarim of Ishbitz and of Tzadok, right, that whole Kant, that is the whole Cheshbin, that when Kairach said that Kola Eda Kulam Kedoshim Hema, everyone in Klai Yisrael is holy. The Briskers are very against that line. They hold that was the source of Kairach's mistake. Rav Tzadok likes it. Rav Tzadok holds that Kairach was right, but he just was saying it in the Ishbitz, but he was saying it at the wrong time. But whatever it was, but Kairach was a person who was looking out for himself. He was a Talmud Chacham. He was a great person, right? I heard a Rav Gedolim was talking about him. He said, if you looked at him today, he'd be wearing a frock and he'd be wearing an upet, he'd be a Rosh Yeshiva. But with all that, Kairach was a person who just wanted to take. And you should know, one of the Musa yeshivas in Europe, there was one of the Musa yeshivas, I'm not going to say which one, that the Chazon Ish did not hold of the Reshiva at all. At all. And why didn't the Chazon Ish like him? Because when that Musa yeshiva, towards the end, before the Holocaust, they had a massive machlaikis there.
Right.
And a vicious machlaikis. And the Chazon Ish was just despoiled that people who held they were Bali Musar, right, who held it there, such big Bali Musar, could be involved in such a machlaikas and act so improperly. And he held that this person was a total negeb, total negias. He was a shtick negias. He was only concerned with his own self. And that's what Kairach was. So when people wonder, I think even today, you see sometimes, you could see people who seem great, but yet get involved in petty machleksin, I think that's what it comes from.
Yeah, there you go. And there's the love boat. So,
but
you know,
like
it's
the crew
it's,
of the love boat. The crew of the love boat had Shalom Beneim.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
This is Isaac. This is Gopher. This is Doc. This is Julie. This is the captain. What do we have in common between them? They got along with each other. They liked each other.
And they're on
the that's why I don't find the question of Susei Chaim, I don't find it so compelling.
Yeah, again, I have to go through the whole essay. But one of the, I mean, he brings on a medrash. It's a medrash I wasn't familiar with. And I can't remember the source of it. And it's in my shtender in the Kol, so I don't have to look up. But a medrash about an almana and two yosaimim that they come to Moshe Rabbeinu and he says, right, you know, the medrash, right?
So. With all the gifts to the Kohanim to give,
yeah, they have to do. They can't do klayim, and they can't have the yeshor v'chamor and all these things. And anyhow, but yeah, I'll go through the piece and I'll get back to you on.
But the idea of that was that the absolute cynicism that Kairach had, because Kairach could not see beyond himself. It says, you look. Rashi says that Kairach was blind in one eye. That doesn't mean literally. It just means that Kairach had no perspective. Right? He was not able to see. I don't think you could drive. If a person's blind in one eye, a person can't drive. Why not? Because he doesn't have perspective. So Kairach had no perspective on himself. He was this Paulite Kairach. Kairach's whole idea was to take. Right, and therefore he was not able. That's why I just say one more thing from the Maharal. The Maharal says that if you look at what was created, Monday doesn't say Toiv. It says Toiv on Sunday, and Toiv on two times on Tuesday to make up for Monday, and Toiv on Wednesday, and Toiv on Thursday, and Toiv Ma'ayit on Friday. But when it comes to Monday, there's no Toiv. Why not? Because that's the first day of Machlaikis. What is Machlaikis? That's a separation of the Mayim Elyon and Mayim Tachtonim. Mm-hmm. So really, what is not machlokes? It's a separation
right.
between the mavlim, the amayim ayayin, amayim tachtayim, between the upper waters and the lower waters. Why does it say it's machlokes? So the answer is because even though that itself was not machlokes, but it gave the rise to the potential for machlokes, and people use it the wrong way. And the Maharal says that's why Gehenna was created on Monday too.
Interesting. And by the way, that's why you know that the shear for Monday. Mizmor Shir Livnei Kairach.
Livnei Kairach, exactly. Because
yeah.
they're coming to they got it right. You know, the Medrash says that when they fell into the pit also, but there was like a ledge in the pit, they landed on the edge, they got themselves back out because they were not involved in Machlokes. But you see, right. there's something so seductive about Machlokes. Machlokes is seductive. And you see, and that's why to me it's amazing, like I asked this question, why? We have so many chumras in Klai Yisrael, and good chumras, in my opinion. People have good chumras, right? Chumras on food, and chumras on Shabbos, and these are good things. Why is there not more of chumras based on this idea of shalom?
Right. Yeah, well, it's you know, it's like the famous story that I'm sure everyone knows, and if you don't know it, then it's not famous. But you know, the guy who noticed his neighbor was reading his paper every day. And would fold it back up and put it under his doorstep. You know the story? You don't know the story? Okay, so we'll make it quick.
Maybe I don't know.
Okay, so a guy knows this, like, you know, again, I don't have a subscription to the newspaper. I don't even know if there's such a thing as newspapers anymore. I don't know how to read, so it doesn't really matter. But apparently there's a big difference between a fresh newspaper and a newspaper someone's already been through. And
I used to have my servant iron my newspaper.
There you go. So perfect, right? So this man noticed that his newspaper was being read before he got it in the morning. And he started trying to figure out what was going on. He got up early and he realized his neighbor would get up even earlier than him. He'd take his newspaper, he'd read it, and then he'd stick it back in the thing and put it on his doorstep. And he said to the neighbor, hey, you know, I know what you're doing with my paper. Stop doing it. He goes, well, what's the big deal? Zen nen evzel lochaser, I get it back to you before you want it. What's the big deal? And he goes, no, I want a fresh newspaper in the morning. Don't touch my newspaper. And the man saw this was heading towards Machlokas. So he went to his Rav to ask him what to do. You know, think of the Rav would intercede, tell the man to leave the newspaper alone. And the Rav said, why don't you buy your neighbor a subscription to the newspaper? He said, what? He's taking my paper. Why should I buy him a subscription? He said, look, we spend money on everything. We spend money on Yontif. We spend money on mitzvahs, on simchas, on lulav, esrog. You name it. There's a mitzvah. We spend money on it. Shalom's also a mitzvah. Why shouldn't we also have a shalom fund? In other words, when you see something is heading towards machlokas, as opposed to you know letting it go towards machlokas, take the money out of the shalom fund. Because the old adage that anytime anyone says it, you know, it's not about the money. If somebody says it's not about the money, you know that it's about the money. So you know, shalom's a mitzvah. Make a shalom fund and take the money out of there.
I just heard a Maritika Maisa from Abyss and Karelitz, who was nifter not long ago. He was the Abbez and Bnei Brak, a nephew of the Chazanish.
Right.
Unbelievable maisa with him that a neighbor came to Nissen all upset and said, you messed up the pipes to my house. So Nissen said, yeah, well, what happened? He said, you painted your house. And then the paint went down the pipes and it messed up my pipes. So it cost me 600 shekels to unclog them. I want you to pay it. So Nissen said, no problem. He gave him 600 shekels. So his sons saw the Maisis and asked the father, he said, you think you really chayav the money? So Miss said, I give you three rayas why I'm putter. Raya number one is, Nissen was one of the paiskim who really understood Matzias, like Rosh Hashanah Zalman, similar to him. He said, number one, paint does not mess up pipes. The Matzias doesn't mess up the pipes. It involves a lot of, it doesn't mess up pipes, number one. And just outside of that point about Nissen, when he was in his Bezdin, when he was younger, people would ask him, they had Dene Taira. They say you'd see him walking anywhere in Bnei Brak, like inspecting sides of buildings. He was very involved. He said, number one, doesn't paint mixed with water does not ruin the pipe. The number two, he lives on the other side of the building than we do. He said, so we don't even share the same pipes. He said, and the third rye I have, why I don't owe money is because I didn't paint my house recently. So his son said, he goes, so why'd you give him? So this one said, so 600 shekel to have Shalom? It's a great deal. Meaning, yeah, a person who looks at life that way, and right now, there's I try not to ever be involved in my life because there's a person now who's driving me batty. Mom is driving me insane about a certain issue. I'm furious at him, but I try to tell myself, machlekes, avoid it the same way. You know, the night that Behuda has in Truvas, with a situation with a machlekes, he wrote, mutav lahami tzelem behechel, better to put a vaydazar in hechel and engage in machlekes. So people, machlekes is a very, very bad thing. So I think it's good and healthy when people have different hashgachos.
Beautiful.
Right, it's a great thing. They think differently, but at the same time, I think we need to be careful of, you know, even though it's good to think your hashgacha is right. But first of all, there's many people in Klal Yisrael, and not everyone can be the same. That's, by the way, one of the mistakes I think at Kairach, elaborate what we said more about Kairach's mistake. When Kairach said that all of Bnei Yisrael, Kulam Kedoshim Hema, they're all on the same level, it doesn't work like that. The communists tried that. It's like a human dream. We're having it right now. America's going through it. We all can be the same, and no one's different, and everyone is exactly equal. And we don't need the police. We don't need governance, right? It always ends badly. It always ends badly. Everybody's different. We need to have some degree of governance, right? And this is going to end badly too in America, and very badly.
Okay, on that note, rather than on a good note, so let's remember that idea that Rabbi Spear was saying about have a shalom fund, how shalom's also a mitzvah, so on a positive note. But we love your attention. We love your watching and listening to this podcast. Please share it with everybody. Leave us a positive review. If you have any feedback, please give it to us. And in the meantime, a big old fat welcome to the guest.
I want to make one last announcement. Rabbi Landis has a machlekes fund, if you want to contribute to it.
Yes.
Where he will, on your behalf, argue with other people. He can be your shia. If you don't want to get into
a machlekes, type of guy.
Hey, my land is, what do you charge?
$150 an hour. Everyone's going to make a living.
It's probably, you know what? It probably would work psychologically. A person would get rid of the Yetzer of machlekes. I'll fight for you.
Yeah.
The person would fight. I don't know. All right.
All right, everyone have a great week. We'll talk to you more next week.
Okay. Bye-bye. It's Geschmack to be a Yid. It's Geschmack to be a Yid. It's Geschmack to be a Yid.